Asia Pacific currents.
News and labour issues from the Asia Pacific region.
We strongly condemn the police that arrest the protesters.
Saturday mornings at 9 o'clock.
On Community Radio 3CR.
Workers of the world should unite to fight this greedy capitalist.
Brought to you by Australia Asia Worker Links. Good morning and welcome to another episode of Asia Pacific Currents here on Community Radio 3CR. I'm Giselle Hannah and I'm taking you through to 9:30 this morning. Of course, APC is brought to you by Australia Asia Worker Links. You can find us on the web, all the ws.aawl.org.au. We're on Substack and Facebook. Look us up on those social media platforms. On today's program, I don't have a new, fresh interview for you, so I'm going to replay an interview that we did a couple of weeks ago with Shivani Kaur from Bigul Mazdoor Dastar about the labour codes in India. But we do have some news from around the region, so we'll get straight into it. And we will actually start in India, where there have been some preventable deaths of three sanitation workers in Raipur, which have raised questions about unsafe conditions and caste-based discrimination in Indian workplaces. A worker was cleaning a septic tank in a private hospital when he fell unconscious. Three comrades came to help, only to suffer the same fate. One remains alive in a critical condition. The Municipal Sahkar Mazdoor Union stated that their deaths highlight the conditions of sanitation workers who continue to work without protective equipment, proper training and safety protocols. Sanitation workers die because of toxic gases inside septic tanks, methane, carbon dioxide, ammonia and hydrogen sulfide. Without protective equipment or ventilation, these spaces are deadly. The General Secretary of the Indian National Municipal and Local Bodies Workers Federation noted that it is more than a labour issue as it is deeply tied to caste-based discrimination. This type of work in India is assigned along caste lines linked to inequality and state apathy, and the persistence of manual hazardous sanitation work reflects a failure to dismantle caste-based occupational structures. Moving now to Palestine, on Tuesday, the Israeli parliament passed a controversial and discriminatory and, quite frankly, abhorrent bill that imposes the death penalty on Palestinians convicted of murder of Israelis. The following day, unions in Palestine launched a nationwide strike against the bill, which was supported by international affiliates, including Public Services International. PSI called upon the international community, trade unions and civil society organisations to act collectively to uphold human dignity and the rule of law. Several countries and international organisations joined in the condemnation. The European Union, with Britain, France, Germany and Italy, expressed concern over legislation which undermines democratic principles, while Amnesty International stated the laws may amount to war crimes. PSI calls on the international community to exert maximum pressure to repeal this law and hold Israel accountable to meet its obligations under international law. Industrial Global Union, alongside five Malaysian affiliates, has filed a formal complaint with the ILO Committee on Freedom of Association against the government of Malaysia, documenting a pattern of union busting across 12 companies in the electronics, aerospace, semiconductor, automotive, and paper sectors. The complaint accuses the government of failing to protect against employer interference in workers' rights to organise and bargain collectively. Across these cases, workers and unions faced a consistent set of tactics. Employers threatened them with loss of pay and benefits if they formed a union. Workers were warned of factory closures and layoffs. Migrant workers were targeted with threats of deportation and non-renewal of work permits. Company buses were deliberately delayed on voting days and polling stations were made inaccessible. Quite the effort to stop people voting. Union activists were dismissed, subjected to disciplinary proceedings and even charged following successful ballots. The complaint shows a failure of Malaysian authorities to act against these abuses. And in South Korea, Korea's Samsung Group is facing back-to-back worker action as its biopharmaceutical arm, Samsung Biologics, moved towards its first-ever strike, joining a parallel standoff at Samsung Electronics. The union at Samsung Biologics, which represents 75% of the workforce, called a vote after months of stalled wage negotiations and secured strike authorization with the support of 95.5% of eligible voters. The union had demanded a 14% average wage increase, but management offered only 6.2%. The union said they were willing to compromise, but only to reasonable offers. Meanwhile, Samsung Electronics' semiconductor workforce is locked in a parallel dispute, with a union warning of an 18-day strike from May 21st, after three-quarters of members back to walkout. The dispute centres on the company's decision to keep a cap on performance bonuses of 50%. The company offered other incentives to compensate, but the union stated that negotiations were not being held in good faith. A rally will take place on the 23rd of April, ahead of any potential strike action in May. In a significant union win with the Papua New Guinean Nurses Association has secured a formal government commitment to fully fund and implement the long-awaited Nurses Industrial Award. Excuse me. The PNGNA held a national-wide protest on Tuesday, demanding the government to honour the Nurse Award, which was signed in May 2025, but was not reflected in the 2026 budget. Nurses said that they didn't want a commitment, rather a clear time frame as to when the payments will be made. The protest led to an emergency meeting between the PNGNA president and the health secretary, who outlined a new timeline in which authorities will verify and update nurses' entitlements in the payroll system between March 31 and April 30, followed by phased payments of backdated entitlements, with 30% to be paid between May and July and another 30% between July and September. The remaining balance settled by December 2026 and outstanding payments will be addressed in the 2027 national budget. Massive win for those nurses in PNG. And our final story, workers in Bangladesh's shipbreaking industry are said to gain vital social protection under a new employment injury scheme pilot, marking a significant step forward for the hazardous industry. Shipbreaking is often called the most dangerous work in the world. Workers face daily risks from toxic materials, heavy machinery, and falls. Most of the time, workers have little or no recourse when injured or falling ill on the job. The new Employment Injury Scheme pilot establishes a fund providing pensions and financial support to workers and their families unable to work due to job-related injury or illness. The scheme complements the Hong Kong Convention on Safe and Environmentally Sound Shipping Recycling, which sets international standards for the industry. BIMCO, the world's largest international shipping association, is calling on its members to sign a letter of intent to contribute to the EIS fund. IndustriALL Global Union is calling on ship owners to contribute 50 cents per tonne to the employment injury scheme. And that is news from around the region, a community announcement, and then our feature interview for the morning.
Help us stay radical. Become a regular donor to 3CR. A regular donor is someone who loves 3CR so much that they set up an automatic donation to 3CR on the same day every month. 3CR is determined to stay independent. This means we don't rely on corporate sponsorship or government funding. We serve our community, not corporate interests. But this also means we do rely on people like you to keep the station running. From paying the bills to maintaining our studios to training the next generation of community broadcasters, 3CR relies on community donations to survive. By becoming a regular donor, you can help us stay resilient and radical. Will you help 3CR by becoming a regular donor today? Together, we can keep independent voices on air. Go to 3cr.org.au.
We're going to recap our interview from a couple of weeks ago with Shivani Kaur. Here's that interview now.
I'm Shivani. I'm a political activist based in New Delhi, India. I'm part of a workers' organization called Bigul Mazdoor Dasta. And I'm involved with various trade unions in and around Delhi.
So to begin with, can you please explain what the labor codes are?
Yes. So, you know, the labor codes and the talk surrounding introduction of labor code has been there for a long time. And I won't say just in 2014 when Modi government assumed power and, you know, it came to power. It's not just since then that they've been hell-bent upon, quote unquote, reforming the erstwhile labor laws, but since 1999, when the earlier BJP government was in power, the Vajpayee government, Atal Bihari Vajpayee-led BJP government, which was a coalition government, even since then, since 1999, there were a lot of discussions around changing the existing labor laws framework in India. So, for example, in 1999 itself, there was a second National Labor Commission, which was constituted by then Vajpayee government, and it came up with a report in 2002, and it was a very long 1700 page report, which actually talked about dismantling the all kind of protection that the working class in India used to get with the erstwhile labor laws framework. Now, it's nobody's case that the earlier laws were, you know, pro-labor. Nobody's saying that. And when we are opposing the implementation of labor codes also, we are pointing to the fact that obviously they were insufficient and they were actually applicable only to a very small part of the working class in India, which was organized working class, the employees, which were, you know, which are employed in the formal sector of economy. So most of the informal sector and most of the organized workers in formal sector as well, they did not automatically fall within the purview of the erstwhile labor laws themselves. But the fact is that even when these laws were there, there was a fair bit of chance then that when workers organized under the banners of their unions, when they collectively bargained and struggled, there was a chance that they could have got something implemented in their favor. And this has happened. For example, I, being a labor activist, and I have worked with so many trade unions in India, especially around Delhi. So for example, there was a strike by unorganized sector workers in the steel industry in Delhi itself, which were unorganized informal workers. But when they struggled, when they collectively came together and, you know, launched an agitation to get these laws implemented in their favor, to a large extent, they were able to do that. But now with dismantling of this earlier framework, what Modi government has done, you know, in the name of reform, in the name of, you know, rationalization, in the name of simplification of old labor laws framework, it is actually now bending backwards, you know, to actually help the capitalist class in ease of doing business. So what does this ease of doing business actually mean? It means that all those provisions that were available in whatever measure, in whatever degree, and one can contest that too. But yes, whatever protections and whatever social security benefits, whatever legal guidelines there were there earlier, they have been dismantled. So now, you know, what was, you could say, a de facto reality for most of the, for the majority of the working class in India has become a de jure reality now. Because now the contract system has been legalized. Now the right to strike, right to collective bargaining, this right that is actually enshrined in the constitution of this country, it has been criminalized. Now, you know, under the guise of national floor level wages, capitalists are free to, not pay minimum wages.
I want to ask about the number of strikes that have happened since the labour codes were announced. There's been quite a few since November, since the law's introduction, and a recent national strike in February. Can you tell us a little bit about which groups are striking, what their demands are, and tell us a little bit about workers' mobilisations in opposition to the laws and also the cost of living crisis?
Yeah. So, Giselle, what I want to point out is that now, yes, there was a one-day strike call, which was given by the central trade unions in India, which are, backed by most of the social democratic parties. And there are some independent central trade unions as well. Now, this one-day call was there, and these one-day national strike calls have been given since 1991 itself. So since 1994 itself, there have been 30 one-day or two-day national strike calls. There is a limitation to these one-day strike calls. The first thing is that we have witnessed these strike actions taking place, but we have seen that the neoliberal assault by the bourgeois states, and I'm not just talking about the fascist Modi government. Before fascist Modi government was in place, there were other governments as well. And the onslaught of these neoliberal regimes on workers' rights has been there, and it's for everyone to see. Now, having said that, we have this experience behind us where we have seen that these one-day calls don't work anymore. Now, the governments also know that, this one-day action is going to happen, and this will be, compensated by making workers work overtime in the coming days. So the one-day thing doesn't work at all. And the reality of the one-day strike is that even on these one days, it's too nominal. It's too, ritualistic. It's not there. It might sound very pessimistic, or people might point out the fact that even now when the, Modi government is attacking, and it is one of the biggest, the biggest attack on the rights of the working class, since independence. We accept that fact. But the kind of resistance and the kind of action, the kind of militancy that this kind of attack demanded is totally lacking. And our organization was at the forefront of running these campaigns, because we found out that, a large section of the working class does not even know what is there in the labor code. So the workers need to be educated. There is a general sense of apathy among the unorganized sector workers. So we need to approach them and tell them and educate them and inform them about how dangerous these labor codes are going to be. So, for example, when we were running this campaign since 21st November itself, we saw that, there is a sizable chunk of workers who don't understand the dangers that these labor codes pose. And then there is another segment that knows the dangers, the risk, the hazardous nature of the labor codes, but they are at sea, because even they are saying that we approach our union leaders, we say that we must go into some kind of militant action, but that sort of call is lacking. And then with this campaign, we actually appealed to all the central trade unions that you should take lead. Don't limit the action to one day ritualistic ceremonial strike call. Turn this one day call, transform, convert this one day call into a call for indefinite general strike. And that is the kind of weapon that working class must employ at this moment, because obviously, to overcome this sort of attack by the fascist government, we need to resort to the measures that are of extreme nature. And with this campaign, we got to know that obviously there is a large-scale discontent, but even, you know, these workers who are organized under the banner of these central trade unions, they don't know what to do. And it's true that spontaneously there have been many strike actions, not, you know, heeding to the call of any central trade union, but spontaneously. For example, especially the gig workers in India, and we must salute their militancy. They are in an embryonic stage of, you know, forming their unions.
There's a lot in that. I guess my question is, how do we get the masses of workers to take up the call that you just said? I mean, you know, the idea of an indefinite strike is not easy to coordinate, yet you're of the view that that is probably what it will take to overcome these labor laws.
Yes, obviously it's easier said than done. And we know that, you know, there are a lot of challenges that one faces in organizing that sort of concerted, coordinated action. But the fact still remains that the initiation has to be done at the behest of those central trade unions that are active in most of the organized sectors, and that can, you know, even if they leave apart a call of indefinite, because that is the positive proposal that we are giving, but even if a call of a strike action for at least 1 week or 15 days, or earlier they were saying we'll organize a call, of a strike for 3 days, but then that sort of call did not come up. What we witnessed was a one-day call. So I know that there are going to be challenges, but what are we waiting for? Obviously, we used to say, and most of the central trade unions used to say, that it's a big weapon of the working class and it needs to be used as at an opportune time. But what could be better opportune time than the time that we are facing right now? We are in dire straits right now. And we must also put into perspective that obviously there were farmers' unions that actually did something of that sort. I don't agree with the demands that these farmers' unions were raising, for example, the demand for minimum support price. I don't agree with it. But the kind of action that they initiated was sort of an indefinite strike. They were there, they were, you know, at the borders of Delhi, and they did not go back. That sort of action was there when the farmers' unions actually, you know, opposed the three farm laws, launched by the Modi government. But why that sort of action is lacking here, when we know that this sort of assault is unprecedented, and nowhere in the history of independent India we have witnessed that kind of, you know, assault on the rights of the working class.
Shivani, I mean, you've made a very good case for why there needs to be movement and action. I guess my question is, without any of the forces that you described, what do you think is the future of these labour laws and the situation for workers in India under them?
Situation is, you know, pretty bad, because as we discussed, for example, now right to strike, right to collectively bargain, they have been made too difficult. Secondly, for example, in the name of increasing working hours, because now the labor, these labor codes, for example, one of the labor codes categorically mentions that overtime can be done over by any, you know, workers can be made to work overtime without mandatory payment of the overtime. So it's kind of forced labor that workers are being forced to do now. Also, with the fixed term employment, there is this provision under the new labor codes where contract system has been given a legal status, and it was there informally. This had been happening especially in the automobile sector in India, where fixed term employment was there, but now it has been given a legal facade as well. So, for example, FTE, the fixed term employment, again, the national floor level wages, which does away with the mandatory provision of ensuring that payment of minimum wages is done. And it was a criminal liability earlier. If you don't pay, I'm not saying that everywhere it was implemented and, you know, capitalists were put behind bars. That was not happening earlier also. But at least there was a provision where if you don't pay minimum wages, you attracted criminal liability. Now that has been done away with. So I believe that with these labor codes in place, obviously things are going to be difficult. Obviously, you know, strikes are going to be, organizing strikes are going to be difficult. Getting a trade union registered is going to be difficult. And contrary to, you know, registering a trade union, registering a factory has become extremely easy. So now online, a factory owner can make an application and, you know, the labor inspector, which is not just an inspector now, which has become an inspector cum facilitator, it can just, without any inspection, without going on ground and checking whether all kinds of provisions are being, you know, implemented, it can just give the registration online. But for registering a trade union, things have been made extremely difficult. So obviously things are going to be difficult, but the other side of the coin is that after these labor codes have been implemented, we are also witnessing spontaneous strike actions, militant strike actions by workers also. Now, what needs to be done is to bring this element of organization, element of consciousness within these spontaneous, working class actions. But that is also happening. Because obviously, if we must not forget that the labor laws served dual roles. They were the regulatory framework as well. And obviously, the workers fought hard and, made governments recognize these rights. But they had a regulatory role to play. Now, if you just do away with all kind of regulation, then obviously, things are going to take radical shape. They are going to take a militant shape, and that's what we've been witnessing for past two and a half months, what gig workers have been doing, what unorganized sectors workers have been doing. But having said that, the element of consciousness, the element of organization is needed, and still we believe that these labor codes, a concerted effort needs to be built where these labor codes should be challenged. And we must, and for example, our organization and our fraternal trade union, we are still, going ahead with these campaigns where we are not just educating the working class, but also putting forth the idea that a militant action needs to be initiated. Still asking, we are still appealing to these central trade unions that it's not till late. We can still initiate some sort of, you know, a concerted, a coordinated effort where these labor laws could be challenged in a big way. So obviously, right now, it's a fact that the forces of labor are on a back foot, but still, with these spontaneous working class actions taking place, it also gives us a ray of hope that if, there is a proper element of organization, proper element of consciousness, which is introduced in these spontaneous struggles, obviously, things are going to get better. So, but yes, the labor codes in the first place needs to be challenged, and we must make efforts to compel the government to take them back.
That was Shivani Kaur. And that brings us to the end of another episode of Asia Pacific Currents here on Community Radio 3CR. Stay tuned for Palestine Remembered coming up next, but that's